Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 17th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we will visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Oscar Morkeme, who originally came from Nigeria. Nigeria is a huge country, twice the size of California. In fact, one in four Africans is Nigerian. The country is known for producing oil, mining minerals, and farming some of the most fertile land in the world. Their population has increased dramatically over the past 50 years and is estimated that there are 1 million Nigerian immigrants who are part of the diaspora here in the United States. Oscar is a collector of African art and is the founder and executive director of the Museum of African Culture in Portland, Maine. He also regularly hosts workshops, performances, and lectures on African arts and culture. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Oscar.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure to have you here on this gorgeous day.
Indeed. Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about where you were born and raised, what that looked like?
Well, I was born in the city of Aba, spelled A-B-A, which is in the eastern part of Nigeria. And originally, we came from a town of Oba, O-B-A. And Oba is settled north of River Niger, of Onitsha. And it's a town with 9 villages. And I came from, my ancestors have lived in that land for generations. And we came from the village of Aboji village in Oba.
There are a lot of O's in African names.
It's a lot of O's.
Including Oscar.
Yes.
Is this the southern part of Nigeria?
This is the southern part, the southeastern part of Nigeria. Or what you may call the East Central State.
East Central State.
Yes. Hmm. Yes.
What was it like there, daily life, when you were a kid in your big family?
Well, daily life is very fascinating. And, you know, I come from a very old traditional home, which is, you know, the life structure back in Nigeria when I was growing up is not the same structure as you see here in the U.S. and the Western cultures, because their families are center part of your daily lives, you know, where you have deep relationships with your siblings and your grandparents and your uncles and your aunties and probably the village as a whole, an integral part of your being. And most people who live in villages or in the city, it came from some village. And then they migrate to big cities for economic reasons. And they will frequent back and forth between the city and the villages. So we are privileged to have grown up experiencing those two lives and balance. You know, growing up, we were born and raised in a Christian environment with a very deep understanding of our traditional values and culture. My parents made sure that we participate in traditional cultural festivals and disciplines, as we also enjoy the Western influence of New World, which is the Christianity.
There were a lot of changes in your lifetime going on in Nigeria. It got independence in 1960.
Yes.
And then went through many years of upheaval.
Yes.
During this time, it sounds like your family was in and out of Nigeria for safety reasons.
Yes. During the Civil War, during the independence, one of my uncles, Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe, was the first president of Nigeria. And then during the war itself, we were the Biafrans. So we were the ones who had been tortured or prosecuted, so to speak. So fortunately, we were able to leave the country and go to northwest of London, where we stayed for years during this crisis. And after the war, we all came back and, you know, participated in education and immersed back into the traditional culture. But often, most summer, or what we call long vacations, we often travel back to UK. So we sort of experienced the two lives of the Western culture and Nigerian culture. And Nigerian culture in the contemporary style of living in the city and the experience of living in the village, because that's our roots. Yes.
You have two hands.
Yes.
And you have two cultures that you were raised in.
Correct.
I think you're a great example of that. I think people will discover that as we go on a little bit.
Yes.
Can you tell us about your family's history and who might be the most proud member of your family? Who's most proud of you?
Oh, I think everybody is. And we are proud of everyone, each other. Because we, you know, in my family, it seems like we thrive to compete, to be the best. The notion in growing up back home is that you are exceptionally best at who you are. And you strive to be the very best of what you are or what you do. Not just that for individual achievements, but to realize that every experience you are having outside of the family, you are representing the family and the community. So that sort of sets up a standard of moral and character building, knowing that you have a legacy to maintain and a legacy to protect. It's not, you know, not what you can do for me, but what can I offer and how can I contribute in human development.
This seems to be a little piece we tend to miss. It's a lot of, I've just been to a graduation and the talk was, how can I make my thumbprint? How can I be special?
Yes.
And I just think it misses that last point so that I can bring that back to my community.
Yes.
And that's something you hold already kind of on a cellular level.
Yes. Everything you do is about what can you contribute, how to be kind to other people. And so I felt like most of my upbringing, I learned a lot from my grandparents who sort of modeled this sort of a character building and then supported fully by both my parents as we struggle to become teenagers. We sort of have that frame of reference where our grandparents support a lot of ideas and our parents back them up. There's a difference in child rearing where a child or individual have no relationship with their grandparents. The child is always different or grew up differently. And also, when you come to the Western culture, you see there's a lot of disintegration in family units and stuff like that through separations and divorces. And it also breaks down the virtue of a child's character building because they're torn into two places. And then when those things are happening here, there's not enough support from the family, to especially those immigrants. You know, they feel they're struggling by themselves or dealing with the sort of a legal system that is so alienated from their own frame of reference. So you find a lot of immigrants, when they're here, their mind is centered around the sort of family upbringing they had, where you have the village and your grandparents and your parents and your siblings and uncle and aunties and your linear family members supporting that particular family. So when we are here in America or in Maine, you feel, you sense a sense of isolation where it's you and maybe Department of DHS or who doesn't really understand this sort of virtue or dealing with the law. And this sort of things can create a big impact in how parents parent their children.
I know that's a big issue here. People had a way that worked, and it doesn't work in this context.
Yes.
And so then what?
Then they're confused.
Yes.
Or they become trapped in sort of an illusion that doesn't benefit them or raising their children. So there's a struggle. Not that the system doesn't find some sort of artificial band-aid aid to help them, but on the spiritual level, I think that most of this family need that spiritual guidance and spiritual healing to help them reintegrate and parent their kids.
Are there places that you think they can go and get that here in Portland?
Yes.
If they're feeling alone and need more spiritual integration?
Oh, yes. They can go to a place called the Museum of African Culture.
Oh. You might know something about that.
Oh, yes, we do a lot of that. We see a lot of families who are going through struggles and can come and discuss the issue. So it's a very cultural sensitive approach that we may apply to their culture and help them understand the rule of law in America. And there are certain principles and discipline that functions in back home that doesn't apply here. But most of this first generation of Africans are parents who were born and raised in Africa, and they migrated here for some reason. Their children were born here, and their children don't understand the concept that their parents are trying to impacting them. So they have a place where they're stuck.
So the whole family comes into the museum together?
We have to arrange that. Typically, the mom or the dad or the two parents will come together and say, this is what we are dealing with.
And you're the counsel.
Yes, I do provide those guidance, counseling.
That's really interesting to know. I think yes. I'll refer people there.
Yes, indeed.
You come from an ethnic identity of Igbo.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And can you tell us what that means? What it means to you as a person and what it means to you as a Nigerian?
To be an Igbo?
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain that. It's like it's just as being a human from a particular race or tribe or culture. We Igbos or Africans believe that our ancestors were born and made from the soil of that land back in Africa, and they lived and they die and they're buried there. We have a sense that we didn't come from somewhere and conquer the people on that land to occupy this space. So we feel connected to the earth, and we are connected to our body and our mind and God, or whatever you conceive God to be. So there's a sense of pride in being an Igbo or being a Yoruba or any other ethnic group within Nigeria or within Africa who are original settlers of a particular land. From history, they believe that the Igbos are Jews or from Hebrew. And from what I understood is that the word Igbo was sort of broken down from the word Hebrew. When these Hebrew men and women sort of missed their way, or they got lost somewhere, I don't know where they were going, and they settled somewhere, they said, who are you guys? And they were like, we are Hebrews. And, of course, people don't usually pay attention to what people are talking and say, Hebrews, they're Igbos. And so the word, they classified this group of people, say, Igbo, those are Igbos. And the word became...
It evolved, just like all Igbos. Language does.
Yes.
Yes.
And now the word Igbo is also fading away to Igbo, I-B-O. And originally it was called I-G-B-O, which is Igbos.
I looked into this online, and there's the IGBO and
yes,
the IBO,
yes.
And one conversation was about that one is what you called people in pre-colonial Nigeria, and so that some people don't like one pronunciation or the other.
The traditional Igbo people like to be called Igbos, IGBO.
I'm going with Igbos. I like that. I can keep that.
Yeah.
What are some of the things you remember most fondly about your childhood in Nigeria? The smells, the taste, the feel?
Oh, you see, Nigeria is a beautiful country. And, as a country as a whole, I think I enjoy more of being in my village. Listening to the sound of the rivers, the Idemili River, and different streams. Waterfalls, the sound of the music of the forest, that's the leaves, dance and touch each other. They create this sensation of tranquility as you listen to it. The sounds of the birds. There are many birds that, and they make distinct song and sound that you don't hear them here in America. The food, the smell of the food. I think I did enjoy, and I still do enjoy, yam porridge a lot.
Nigeria is home of the yam, it looked like online.
yes. Yam is our biggest crop, and it's a very wonderful crop. It depends on how you prepare it. So I think my very best one is the porridge, and you have to mix it with vegetable.
Sounds delicious.
And the food is really amazing. Yes.
I would miss that too.
Yes.
Have you been to Chez Biso Nabiso?
No, where's this?
It's a new restaurant up next to Silly's on the East End, and it's a Central African restaurant.
Oh, yes. It used to be Sahara Restaurant.
Oh, I don't know what
so
it was.
I think it's Eastern African Restaurant, and they have traditional meal.
It's brand new. It's from a man from Congo, Clement, has started this restaurant right next door to Silly's. You'll see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Might go there for some yams.
Well, I hope they have some yam porridge.
It's delicious food. I've had it, I can assure you.
Nice.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with Oscar Morkeme, who is originally from Nigeria and is the executive director of the Museum of African Culture in Portland, Maine. Now, Oscar, you were featured in the book New Mainers, and if listeners want to learn more about you, they certainly can go to that book and learn all about your childhood and your journey here.
Yes.
But in there, you talked about the different ways Nigerians and Americans approach training young people to yes. take important roles in their communities. And I wish you could say more about your thoughts around nurturing the talents in young people and when that should start and what it should look like.
See, in Nigeria, in general, especially the Igbos, when a child is born, we try to get the elders to identify skills and traits about that child. When the person is almost 7 or 8 years old, maybe perhaps about 10 years old, we should be able to capture the essence of that particular child and try to encourage that particular person in understanding their role here in the universe of life. We are given so many different spiritual gifts, and we carry lots of different seeds in life. So it's our ability to recognize what talents and skills and seed a particular person is endowed with and encourage them to pursue that particular venture early in life. Often, the normal educational system in the West kind of provide a general education for every child, while every child is so unique and different and have different abilities and opportunities and skills. We don't really focus on those gifts at a very early age. So growing up in Nigeria, our parents and our grandparents and some elders are able to look at a particular child and say, this child is this or that. It's about self-knowledge. We believe that a person with adequate knowledge of self can thrive, can succeed, can not just survive in, can overcome certain obstacles in life easily when they really know who they are and why they're here and what their role is in this earth.
Then they can contribute their gifts.
And definitely they can contribute their gifts, you know, from that very early age. They can begin to volunteer at certain places that is of their calling and have mentors and have role models who will help them understand those qualities and how to enhance and develop them. A person who cannot understand and utilize their spiritual gifts might be lost. They could be climbing the ladder of success on the wrong wall, and eventually they're going to come down from that wall and go to the right place.
Jim Carrey recently gave a graduation address, which is viral, and my favorite part of it, he says his father chose the right path and he became an accountant, and after about 8 years he was fired from his job, and he realized his take-home message was, you can fail doing things you're not good at.
Right.
How about just do things you're good at?
Yes.
We wait a long time to engage children and students into their heart's work, don't we?
Right, right. I think it's paying attention, paying really, really deep attention on a particular child. All children are different. We cannot raise 3 children the same way because they all have different qualities and gifts that they bear. And if we recognize those and have the ability to inspire and motivate them to pursue a certain calling, then they will be on the right path. But failing is okay. When you fail, we must all fail in different things. We must all have challenges. We must all have problems. But it's understanding that those challenges are tools that will help us transcend unimportant things and recalculate and reassess where we are and redo what we've done in the past and do it better.
And true our courses.
Yes.
Yes, align ourselves. Was it your grandparents that saw that you were going to go far and that you would be bridging worlds?
When I was born, or most children, when they were born, we get a dibia. A dibia is a medicine man or a seer or a prophet, however you want to call it, or babalawo, or a diviner, who will look and sort of read the child's palm and read the child's aura and be able to recommend this is what the child will become as the child grows, you know, gets older. And that's the way we capture this information. This information will be translated from the priest who recognized this or the prophet who recognized this and plant it into the grandparents. The parents may be young to carry on this knowledge, but then if the child has a certain gift where they will wear a mask or a certain apron will be made, these symbols will be incorporated in the child's mask or sort of apron or blanket that the child will carry as a child, or that a little doll will be made that recognizes these qualities of the child. Normally, a tree is planted for the child, and the tree may be a tree that bears flowers and fruits. So as this child grows, he or she will see the tree bearing flowers and fruits, and birds come to it. So it means that the child should do whatever they can to attract good things, to produce good results, and have also the potential to endure and be able to avert from different temptations, because we will be seduced by life challenges and tempted by so many different things. But in recognizing who you are and why you're here, you should be able to know that even if you're deviating, you should be able to know that what you're doing is not quite good enough, and you should be able to change that track. And it doesn't matter how long somebody's been doing what they're doing, it's never too late to turn around. So all these sort of changes are encouraged and advised. And when somebody failed, we don't have to hold that person responsible because they failed. We cheer them up because they're learning. Life is a continuous learning process as we grow.
My friend and I came into your museum at the end of April.
Yes.
And it was a magical experience for us. I found it transcended space and time. I was surprised about everything. I walked in, and what I thought I saw was a relatively small space for a museum.
Yes.
And after about 2 hours, we'd made it through about half. And we'd had magical conversations on a very archetypal level.
Yes.
And it brought such a different angle to the same old stuff.
Yes.
It was absolutely refreshing. And I left there thinking, that place is huge. It could go on forever.
Indeed.
It's like a house of mirrors.
Thank you. We like to say that it's the smallest museum in the world.
It can't be. It's not that small. Yes, but I think people should go check it out for themselves.
Yes. I think it's an experience.
Can you tell them where to find you?
Well, the museum is located at 13 Brown Street in Portland. It's one block west of Monument Square and one block east of Maine College of Art. And it's in between Congress Street and Free Street, the Civic Center, next to Margarita Restaurant, right off the Subway Restaurant. So we're right there.
It's tucked away in a corner.
And as a treasure that you have to find.
And just around the corner from the Children's Museum. And
yes.
I would say to parents, if your children are getting a little bit older and they're ready for something else, walk around the corner and try out your museum.
Yes. The museum is not just a museum. It's sort of an interactive space, because museums usually have a sign, do not touch, do not touch. We do the same. We have certain things you cannot touch. But the experience comes in participating in experiential learning. And I think that for somebody to have an experience, you have to have an interaction with some object or an environment. You have to interact with something. So we try to provide those ideas for children who come to our museum to try something, touch the musical instrument, put on the mask, try the costumes, and smell the space. And this senses, you know, enriches somebody's life and give them a different perspective on individual basis. Ask questions, because there are certain descriptions of deep philosophical meaning of the objects on display. But to really get deeper understanding, talk to me when you come there. Don't be shy. I'll be very happy. I'm always very happy to express and explain deeper meaning that connects us back to the spirit.
And you do that when people come in to see you, and they could find you on the website.
You can find us on the website at www.museumafricanculture.org. Yes.
And that's a good way to check the hours to make sure that you're going at the right time. It's open a lot, but if you want to check. And then I'll have that hot linked on the web page if you want to check on newmainerspeak.com. You'll be able to link directly there. And you also take your show on the road.
Yes.
If people were wanting to have you come to see them, how would they get in touch with you?
They can just call us at 207-871-7188. If you can't come to us, we can come to you. Doesn't matter where you are, within the country or outside the country. Most of our programs are created to be travel exhibits and travel programs. And we have touch kits that schools and libraries can check out and bring into classroom and have children and adults touch these things and feel the energy and the power that it vibrates.
And you have times when everyone dresses up in the masks and takes to the street. Is that the Ram Festival?
That is the Ram, this celebration of spring, the Ram, procession of the Ram, which comes in spring. We haven't done that for a while. But
maybe rams and yams this year.
Rams and yams. Yes.
I love it. So I'm afraid we're going to start to have to wrap up. We have a little bit more time left, but I want to make sure we have time for everything. You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and I want to give thanks to my guest, Oscar Morkeme, for joining me here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. Before we close and go to Cruz del Sur with Victoria, I wanted to play one more tune as we go out. And it is a Nigerian piece from a 70s funk collection, Oscar's Choice.
Yes.
Can you tell us anything about that song?
Well, I think I like to hear Fela Kuti. Fela Ransom Kuti. It's an Afrobeat funk.
Wonderful. Hope you enjoy it too. Thanks for joining us.
Get out. Fight. Trouble in the streets. Watch out. Right. Jambais on the way. Get out. Fight. Trouble in the streets. Watch out. Right. Jambais out to stay. Today, oh, 'cause I am the leo, jambati de.